In Module 5, we're going to look at how you can determine healthy screen limits based on your child's individual needs. As I mentioned in our previous module, all about the current screen time guidelines, kids definitely need screen limits. Otherwise, they'd be constantly tethered to their technology 24/7. But what we can't do is prescribe universal amounts of screen time based simply on a child's chronological age. As parents, we all know, even if we have multiple children, that our children's needs are different. Children of a similar chronological age don't necessarily have the same developmental needs or capabilities. We also know that children have different tipping points when it comes to screen time. For some children, they can cope with an hour of screen time and it will have no negative consequences on their behavior or their sleep. But for some children, that hour a day, whilst it still may be adhering to the current screen time recommendations, it can be absolutely catastrophic. It can be far too much. So these children might need smaller amounts of screen time. So we need to look at children's individual preferences, abilities, and needs, and recognize what their tipping point is. Kids definitely need limits, but we don't have to prescribe or adhere to strict prescriptive limits based simply on their chronological age, because this doesn't work for our kids. In addition, we need to focus on more than just how much. We need to certainly acknowledge that kids need limits, but we also need to look at when they're using screens and what they're doing with them as well. Banning or minimizing or trying to avoid screens really isn't a modern solution. You see, when we ban or avoid something, it becomes forbidden fruit. What we actually do is push the unwanted behavior underground. So our kids may not be having screen time with us, but they'll overindulge when they're at their friend's house or at their grandparents' house. And the other reason that we don't want to ban it or to avoid screens altogether is that we have to teach them how to use it in healthy and helpful ways. It's a modern parent's imperative. So, how do we calculate screen time if we're not going to follow prescribed universal amounts? I suggest we go back to what I've mentioned previously about what are our kids' basic needs. And this is where the jar analogy comes in. Some of you may have heard of Stephen Covey's work where he used a glass jar and put marbles in the jar for all the important things in life. And then he said any time that was available outside of all of those important marbles being put in the jar could be filled up with sand. And I'm going to use a similar analogy here when it comes to screen time with our kids. And this is a really simple way, a formula if you'd like, to calculate your child's healthy amounts of screen time. So how can you figure out what is right for your child? I suggest thinking of this as the glass jar as a 24-hour period. And within that 24-hour period, on most days, we all know we have, off days, kids are sick, they just don't feel like doing something some days. But on the whole, as a general formula, we want to think of this glass jar as a 24-hour period. And we want to make sure that our children's basic developmental needs are put into the jar first. We need to make sure that they, for example, having enough time for sleep. So we need to put in prescriptive amounts of time that children need for this basic need to be met. They also need opportunities for play and physical movement. So we need to put each of these building blocks in first. And then, if there's time available, we can fill up the jar with screen time as one of the other activities that they might like to engage in. Another way to use this model is to look at each of the 7 building blocks and look at how they could be expanded, how it could be strengthened by the use of technology. So for example, children's relationships might be that building block could be enhanced if children are using, for example, Skype to have a chat with grandma or dad while he's working overseas. We might be able to strengthen their need to play by allowing them to play some online games. So it's a really helpful way, a simple way. I know as parents we need something quick and simple, but a really easy way for us to come up with an amount of screen time that isn't going to be detrimental to our children's development and health, so we can rest assured knowing that their screen time isn't harming their health and well-being. So another way to look at it is like this. So I can start with putting in children's basic building blocks. And once these create the foundation, once I've put these building blocks in every day, then I can fill up any extra time available with screen time, if that's what I choose to do. So for my son, what we have done, and my eldest son is currently 5, so how do I calculate screen time in our house? So at the moment, whilst Taj is 5, I work out in a 24-hour period. He's sleeping about 12 hours a night, 11 to 12 hours a night. So by the time I deduct his need for sleep, minus his time for eating, remember nutrition is one of the building blocks. Now I've put in his school time, and I've said he's having about 7 hours a day in total at school. And during this time, he's developing language, he's building relationships, he's having play, movement, he's developing his executive function skills. Now these accumulate to a total of about 7 hours. Then outside of school, I try to give him, and again, we can go back to what the known recommendations are. We're trying to ensure that he has around 2 hours a day of play and or physical activity. Now you'll see very quickly, this is not a precise exact science where we can have clear lines of demarcation because there are blurred boundaries, obviously. But on average, we're trying to make sure he has about 2 hours each day. And then there are other rituals. You know, as a parent, we know that there's other little things, all the minuscule things that need to make your house run smoothly. So bath and book is 1 hour a day. So by the time we calculate all of that, so the 12 hours for sleeping, 1 hour for eating, time at school, and physical activity, and other rituals, bath, book, etc., he's left with about 1 hour available a day for screen time. And so that is the absolute maximum threshold that we're giving him. Now, on some days, he has none at all. Other times, we might, you know, particularly on weekends, he might go over that 1 hour threshold, 1 hour limit. But this is a really simple way for us to just make sure that all his basic needs are being met so that we don't need to fret about his screen time encroaching on those. My smaller one, Billy, who's about 2.5 years of age at the time of recording this, he's sleeping about 14 hours a day. So we deduct 24 hours, less the 14 hours, less about 1.5 hours for eating. And then his playtime, which is including movement, language, relationships, he's having about 4 hours. And then we've got other incidental activities. So he's having smaller amounts of screen time each day because he has less available time. But making sure, again, that his basic needs are met first and foremost and that his screen use isn't compromising these. So what is healthy screen time? I'm going to show you in a minute what you should be looking for in when we're looking at what kids are doing with screens, exactly what we should be looking for. But a reminder, it's just breaking a 24-hour period down into the essential building blocks that kids need. Now, I've added here, they're all of this, you can see in this example, all of the 7 building blocks that I've mentioned are here. But I've also added the opportunity for white space. We don't need to cram children's timetables and fill them with planned activities every day. And in fact, our kids are better off without having too much jam-packed into their daily schedules. Remember, kids need white space. They need opportunities to switch off, to enter what we call that mind-wandering mode, where their brain isn't processing information, they aren't being structured and told what to do, that they are literally just creatively and open-endedly exploring their space. So I've mentioned a couple of times that we need to look beyond just the how much, and I've said that limits are important, but we also should look at what kids are doing with a screen. And this often leaves parents thinking, well, what is appropriate for young children? What does healthy screen time look like? What makes a quality online experience? And I'll talk about this again in our final module. One of the best things we can do to make sure that our children's screen time is positive and healthy is to make sure that it's not done in solitude. Co-viewing, or as we're now calling it, joint media engagement, where children use technology with someone, be it a sibling, a parent, a peer, a grandparent. Where possible, we want children using technology with someone else. We've got years of research that tells us that even TV viewing is beneficial if children are watching it with somebody else. We really need to make sure that our kids aren't using technology all the time as a solitary activity. We really want to make sure, where possible, and again, this isn't always feasible, but where we can, that our kids are actually using devices with somebody else. It stops the digital zombie effect, and it causes children, prompts children to engage more deeply with what they're seeing on a screen. So now that we've calculated healthy amounts of screen time with our kids, we know a rough numeric amount of time that is considered healthy and safe for our children. But then remember I said we also need to look at what are they doing online. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about now. What makes a quality online experience? And here are a couple of factors that I suggest. Does the online experience promote active learning? We want kids to assume a really active role as opposed to sitting there passively and consuming content. And I've mentioned this a couple of times throughout this workshop. We want kids deeply engaged with what they're doing, not just passively sitting there and consuming. So again, we want kids creating more than they are consuming and or communicating as well. Does their online experience foster creativity and thinking skills as opposed to just consuming what other people are saying? We also need to look for technology that really fosters engagement. We need to make sure that kids are meaningfully engaged with what they're doing on the screen. Is the learning experience meaningful to that child? Is the app or the website or the game relevant to the child's context? Will they retain the information that they're seeing online, and can they connect it to their real life experience or to concrete resources? So for example, there's a very big difference between counting on a screen and then being able to count the knives and forks on your table as you set the table that night. So are there any contextual details that you might need to consider? Does the app or the technology facilitate social interaction? So are they encouraged to participate with their peers or their siblings or their parents? Has the technology been designed so that more than one person can use it simultaneously? We really want, again, kids using technology with other people. Does the technology provide appropriate scaffolding? So is it commensurate with children's literacy skills? So, you know, does it have too many written instructions where they're young and unable to read them? Does it compensate for their fine motor skills? So if they're not particularly able, you know, not particularly competent at precisely tapping or swiping on a screen, does the app compensate for that? Is it intuitive to use? We want to make sure that children have a positive experience with a screen. They're not going to read the module or watch the online training video about how to use it. We also want to make sure that the technology is really facilitating language. Language is one of the most critical building blocks when it comes to children's learning and development. So does the app promote, or the website or the television show, really have age-appropriate language? Is it introducing new language concepts? Are new terms and vocabulary repeated so that the child can become familiar with them? Does the technology even encourage the child to use language? There are great voice recording apps and storytelling apps and websites that really encourage children to actually apply their language skills. Does the website or the app or the game provide really precise and ongoing feedback? It needs to be really explicit and timely. Generic feedback such as bad luck or good try, try again, is really meaningless to young children. If we really want them to learn and be truly engaged, it needs to be quite precise and explicit. Does it provide feedback when a child's repeatedly making the same error? Or is the feedback quite precise so the child knows exactly where they're making the error? And remember, use apps and websites and games where rewards are used sparingly. Praise and rewards, remember, can often elicit dopamine, and more dopamine than other experiences online, and children can become very dependent on this type of reward and praise. And most importantly, when it comes to online experiences, apart from the co-viewing, which is really essential, is we need to think about whether the app or the website is adding value. is it just a digital replica of a traditional set of puzzles or blocks? If it is, go back to the hands-on experience. Really avoid using technology just for the sake of it. There are lots of digital colouring in worksheets, and in fact, worksheet apps altogether. Go back to the real experience. Just because there's an app for it doesn't mean we need to be using it. If it's a mere replica of a traditional toy or a hands-on experience, don't use it. There really has to be some value add. For example, can your child play or learn in a completely new way that a traditional experience wouldn't? So for example, we've got a wonderful app called The Human Body, and it allows children to explore and interact the various body systems and functions in a really interactive and engaging way that a traditional book or even a website wouldn't be able to do. Can your child investigate how things work? So we really want to look for the value add. What's the technology affording that their offline experience couldn't? So there we have in this module how you can determine healthy amounts of screen time. As a reminder, we don't need to follow the prescriptive screen time recommendations, but we definitely do need to impose limits with our children. And the simplest way that I know to do that, so that we don't feel guilty or concerned, is to go back to what we know. And we know that children have these basic, unchanging developmental needs. And we need to make sure that these needs are met every day, first and foremost, before we introduce screens. And then if we do elect to introduce screens, we can rest assured knowing that their screen time is not going to be displacing, hampering, or interfering with their basic needs. In our next module, we're going to look all about some practical tips and strategies. What can you do as a parent to manage screen time so that it doesn't become screen time?